our permitting project here. The first one up is Blue Sky East LLC. It's a 34 megawatt wind energy development in T16 MD, Hancock County. And Don Murphy and Samantha Horn Olson are going to give us an overview of that project and where we're at.
Well, where we're at is we had our deliberation in August, and we have listened to the commission as well as reviewed the record and put together the permit that you have written as a decision to approve, and we're going to proceed through that. I'll read into it. Where it's LURC development permit 4886, just so that gets into the audio. And this presentation is focused on reviewing the findings of fact and conclusions. And I've been asked, I just picked the ones that we really looked and deliberated on before. And also, Gwen has mentioned that there's particular interest in the decommissioning, noise control, and wildlife. And I have the slides set up that we will just do the overview of those. And if you need details, you can stop me. I have those as hidden slides, you know, other slides that are in the presentation as well. The conditions of approval at the end of the permit, if there's any questions on those, and then there's a recommendation on some changes. It's Township 16 MD over abutting Eastbrook. Gwen's already gone, Chair has already gone through a few. The 19 turbines, 476 feet vertically fully extended to the top of the blade tip. She mentioned the 34.2 megawatts total rated capacity. There's 4.8 miles of new road, 8.2 miles of underground collector line. There's no overhead collector lines related with the turbines. They attach to the substation, which abuts the line 66 of Bangor Hydro. Development cost, $78.5 million. And to give you a sense of the topography, which you've already seen, Bull and Heifer Hills are, Bull Hill is a 624 and Heifer is 450, but they range all through on that ridge. I thought I'd start right with the decommissioning. And we did listen to the public hearing, the deliberations that the commissioners had in August, and put together conclusions and particularly conditions of approval that that reflect what you wanted us to do. Decommissioning is this several parts to it when you break it down. The scope of site work, remove the turbines and restore the site. And you may recall that's take all the foundations down 24 inches, remove all the structures, the turbines come down, roads, areas are regraded. Budget of cost and review. The budget gets recalculated every 3 years, and then revenue is based on scrap steel sale. The decommissioning fund is no longer the net between scrap steel and the cost. It is now, the decommissioning fund now reflects what you were looking to do in August, which is that fund has the capability for LURC to, if they were to initiate decommissioning or facilitate it, they could start the engineering of how that would come apart and then put out an RFP to the contractors. They would have funds on hand for project site ENS maintenance, if you have to go out and stabilize the site or roads while it's in until the final work is progressed. It also includes funds for oversight and administration. Another tenet of this is the final decommissioning plan. Prior to closeout of the project, the permittee will come in, or however this is set up, the permittee will come in. You'll get a final budget and fund calculation, but there'll also be the final details of the site work that's going to be performed and the construction schedules. So that last plan that comes in has the detail to really oversee what's going on. I've already mentioned the site work. The thing I didn't say is the substations, as it's permitted right now, will be transferred to Bangor Hydro, and the O&M operation and maintenance building is transferred to the landowner, Lakeville Shores. During the deliberation, we looked at the adequacy of the fund, the frequency of recalculation, the intended use of the fund, financial assurance, discussed upfront cost of dismantling before the revenue comes in, the volatility of the steel salvage price, and LIRC's role in decommissioning. Revenue is still based on scrap steel sale, but the fund is no longer tied to the difference. So going right to the conditions of approval related to decommissioning, the full decommissioning plan would be triggered move this over a second, by 12 months of no electrical production. A partial plan would be triggered by 50% of the turbines, no electrical production for 12 months. In both cases, the condition is set where the permittee comes in and presents a plan to LIRC for review. There's a method to recalculate the plan budget, detailing out, for instance, that the decommissioning fund, to really calculate the decommissioning fund, what are the costs of establishing the RFPs, et cetera, everything you would need to know to maintain the fund, what would be the site stabilization costs, that type of thing. It'll be fully funded by year 7. So that the first year of operation is a 1/6 payment. So we'll get to the money slide, but at $545,000, that's about $90,000 a year in financial assurance by the end of each of those operating years. And in the 7th year, it's fully funded. That budget tenant of the decommissioning plan gets reassessed every 3 years. Quite frankly, there's no sense to redo the scope of work that's going to be performed. That's already a finding we have right now. It's the budget that we want updated every 3 years. The force majeure events were defined. They were narrowed down a bit. And the final detailed plan at closeout, as I've already mentioned, we'll get a more robust plan at the very end or at any point of closeout. The total cost of decommissioning in the application is $1.8 million and a bit more there, but that's how that's broken out, the management of it, the site work, removal of foundations, removal of the turbine towers. This is the fund I was talking about all the way along here. This has been, we asked the applicant after the application was submitted to give us more detail on decommissioning. Sewell Engineering put together a decommissioning budget and plan that was submitted and added to, and it actually replaced a section of the exhibit that now stands. And we had the numbers in there, and that's where these numbers come from. The source is that Sewell memo of 4/13, April 13th. The project oversight, $125,000, incidentals, $100,000, contingencies, 10% of the total at $200,000, and there was a line for road maintenance at $120,000. So in the record, these numbers add up to the fund total of $545,000. That's how it breaks down at years 1 through 6, financial assurances for $90,000, $833,000 for full funding by a year, by the 7th year, and that's provided in the conditions of approval. This is just a summary slide for you here, and final, I believe, on the decommissioning. Disassembly and removal, $1,885,000. Scrap value, the revenue, that's the revenue stream, that's $1,636,000. This here, $249,000, that's the net estimated cost of decommissioning. That was the initial amount with the application. Now the conditions that have been set up and based on the findings and facts, conclusions, and the record that we have, the condition of approval for that calculation is $545,000. Yeah. And I, however you want to proceed, that's the longest set I have, really.
Okay, I guess, does anyone have any questions or comments?
I think it's important to, again, reiterate, why are we doing this? Why are we even concerned about this whole decommissioning deal? And that is that we've got very substantial projects in terms of the scope of capital construction located in areas of public interest in the state. And the concern is if those should no longer be operating, rather than have them just deteriorate and create potential real adverse effects on public resources that may require the public to come in through taxpayers' money and address decommissioning. What we're saying is that the project ought to, up front, begin to budget for this decommissioning. So the reason here is really to protect the public and the public purse. One of the things is, over time, we've wrestled with this. I mean, we've sort of learned through every project we've gone through. And it seems to me that this is where we are now. And what I'm asking you, Don, is do you view this as sort of the template that we can use from now on, unless there are extraordinary conditions raised under any particular project?
Yes, I do.
So this is it.
This is the basis of what will really give the state what they need to hire the engineers, put this together. It actually sets a standard that even the applicants would know what they have to do when they come in the door. Now you may have other. One thing I want to mention. This brings up the question that Commissioner Hammond had at the. Or his point he made during the August deliberations is, can you look at it in terms of a percentage? Well, I tried to do that. And can we look at it in terms of a cost per turbine? If you really start with what every project is so different, whether there's very little road construction in this, the roads are all there. It's not going up the side of a steep mountain. The stormwater structures are just replacing a few culverts and, you know, maintaining buffers, that type of thing. So every project is so different, it's dangerous to, well, it's my, in my opinion, it's difficult to look at it in just a percentage. This works out, the higher number here works out more like 28%. Roughly. Okay, I meant that. But we were looking at different projects that was in the, we had the procedural order 4 that took place in the spring that gave us the basis to compare different projects. So we're able to talk about that in this. And it also, that's where a lot of this thinking came from.
One other thing, and this is really related again to the point that Toby made during our previous deliberation, and that is, why not just require the applicant to escrow all that money up front? The $1.9 million.
I may ask the permanent staff to help out with that. I have an opinion, but I.
is that a fair representation of your? I just think it's an honest question. That may be a good answer.
I would like the answer. Yeah, I would. Same thing I said before in August when I. Looked at all around the country, the scrap steel, they're buying, they want, these things are being, different states, different regulatory agencies, they are basing decommissioning on the sale, either the resale of the components or the scrap, the significant scrap there. And just the net, I was suspect always of just the net because it never really gave the state the money they needed to hire the engineers to develop the RFP, to put it out, to oversee that process for staff and oversight to really follow it. This third-party inspection of the erosion closeout that's in that fund as well. And so, and the plan is submitted to LIRC for review and approval, so there's room to look at that. Also, when the budget is recalculated every 3 years, we now spell out what has to be in that budget so that you have the detail to make a judgment on the fund. In other words, even during the public hearing, I had asked, back on the slide where there was the 10% at 200,000 and the other. Well, originally the costs were based on Washington County 2011 labor. There was nothing was increased for equipment. It wasn't broken out. And the response from engineer Brett from Sewell behind me here was that that was in that number. But we'll have more detail with that now.
Since I was the one that started this whole issue, we effectively have doubled the cash on hand. And that addresses my concern of coming up short if something should happen to the company that's running it or doing that. And I'm comfortable now that there's enough money there up front to do the thing, set it up, do what we need to do, and then use the scrap as available. So I'm very comfortable with this change.
I agree.
Just in the name of clarity, I want and pointy-headedness, I had talked to both Amy and Samantha about changing a word on page 80 of the decision document under the conclusion section so that it says assurance is needed that the state will have the financial resources to decommission the site if necessary. So, small point, but I want to make sure that everybody understands it's the state.
Thank you. It's noted.
Anything else on the decommissioning plan?
Okay, I'll
move ahead.
We'll take a look at the noise control next. The Bull Hill Wind Permit noise standards. The use of DEP's chapter noise controls, chapter 375.10, and this project abutting the town of Eastbrook, which has a wind facility ordinance in place that has noise standards for grid scale wind projects, is also being considered. Has been considered and incorporated into these sound limits. We listened to the directives from the Commission's deliberation in August. We incorporated the quantifiable standards into the permit and conditions. And then we also required post-construction monitoring for 3 years. I have more detail on that if needed. And a clear complaint protocol and response program that will be in place, also requiring a mitigation plan if needed for conformance to the standards. So if there's violations of the sounds, a mitigation plan has to come in to pull it into conformance. Go right to the conditions here. The hourly sound limits are going to be 40 dBA in the evening. That's 5 less than the DEP at 45. This is 40 dBA in the evening. 55 dBA during the daytime. That's the same as the DEP. And it's also the same in the Eastbrook ordinance. It's the same. Both at 500 feet from the residence of a protected location. Let me just put that. There's a 2-mile limit that the 35 dBA maximum. Nighttime construction sound limits will conform to 40 dBA, and that nighttime is 7 p.m., 7 a.m., or the non-daylight hours. That conforms to the DEP chapter rules. The short duration repetitive sound limits, the standard is met for the project, and that includes 1 5 dBA event added to it if there is an event, there's a penalty that's added to it. Eastbrook added a second penalty, double penalty, that was found not quantifiable because it involved review by the planning board and subjective judgments on what is on that matter. It wasn't pure math. The tonal limits, standard is met, and there's 1.5 dBA for that event. These are all in the conditions of approval. The reporting is annually for the first 3 years with LURC plan approval. If reporting has to continue, it can be directed to be so. The complaint and response protocol is ongoing for the life of the project. And the, very briefly, what that is that the number, first, Blue Sky East will have a 1-800 number that the abutters have, that's well advertised in the area. And when calls come in, there'll be a procedure on how to respond to those calls and how LURC staff will receive notice on those and what steps maybe would be taken. And if the next one, remedial measures, calls for a plan should sound limits be exceeded. There is also a condition of approval for funding for third-party acoustic engineer for reviews and confirming monitoring so that LURC will have the funds to read these reports, to follow up on violations or complaints, and to work with the commission to, and our staff and commission to resolve that. In a nutshell, that's what we heard you talking about and we put together. I have more as far as comparisons, but I did that as I read through them, so I'll just pause there.
I think that was a good summary. Anybody want to...
Don, just so we can be clear, the issue that arose when we were deliberating this was, I think we felt, and I'll speak for myself anyway, but I think the commission also felt that that we wanted to give as much credibility, if you will, importance to the Eastbrook ordinance as we possibly could. I mean, it's a small town. People really came out. It was a Herculean effort on the part of the town. Any of us who live in small towns know what it's like to try to get something like this done. A lot of work on the part of citizens. It was put together. Seemed to be, you know, fairly well done. And we felt that it was important. Whether we had the legal obligation or not, we certainly needed to give some kind of deference to that plan. So could you just quickly summarize where we have incorporated, to the extent we could, the provisions of the Eastbrook ordinance?
Yes, I can. Yes. Yep. I'll do that. I'm just going to use this next. I'm going to use this next slide because it's easy because it's all listed out. Eastbrook had a day and night construction noise sound limits, and the DEP just has the evening. It's difficult. It's just the nighttime, not the daytime, as in their ordinance. The DEP has no sound limit for the 2 miles. And the 35 dBA was in the Eastbrook ordinance. That was definitely incorporated. Monitoring and reporting is not really that spelled out in the DEP. I mean, it's typical during 1 year of a permit, but the language doesn't really make a robust, you know, robust statement as how what there is to be looked for. Definitely in this permit, listening to the Eastbrook residents, there is a reporting procedure. It's not they had year 1, 2 plus every 3. Okay, this condition goes in consulting with our Warren Brown, our acoustic consultant, felt that the first 3 years, and this actually, Sally, Commissioner, you brought this up earlier that you wanted to make, do you really know the first year what's going on? Because they're just starting these up. And when I posed that question, we worked with that. And 3 years, really, you get a better idea over 3 years is what's really going on. You have more conditions to look at. And we went up to 3 years with the extended over what's normally been done. The difference on the measurement location, the method that's developed and used by the industry and is in the DEP ordinance, DEP rule is 500 foot from the residence or the property line, which is ever closer. So if your house is there and the property line is 35 feet away and at night, 40 dBA at that property line, all the modeling that has been done already is under that. So, in other words, what was projected in the application and all as meets that standard right there. So in the evening, 40, at the 500 foot from the residence or from the at the property boundary. The calculations also met at 660 from the parcel, but this 660 from the protected parcel boundary puts you onto other land across the township line. There's all. So that's why this permit has the 500. The hourly limit at night is lower than the state. The tonal is met, and it follows the rules. And I don't have more on here, but the protocol response, you know, for complaints and that type of thing has been developed that is for the benefit of the abutters. Thank you, Samantha. The reporting will be forwarded to the town each year. Yep.
And I guess I just point out that the because it's a logarithmic scale, 40 dBA is substantially lower than 45, and it's also lower than, at least what I've heard in the press accounts, that DEP has been most recently considering for a change. So I think 40 is the nighttime limit of 40 is substantially lower than what would normally be considered by the DEP.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay.
And I understand you'd like to go to the wildlife one and the bats, explaining that, so I'll go right to that.
Yes. Yeah.
Give me a second. The findings of fact and conclusions for wildlife impacts and the conditions of approval that developed throughout these proceedings are summarized here. These findings of facts and conclusions have been met for wetland delineations and vernal pools, rare threatened or endangered species, raptors, and bird and bat surveys and monitoring. And I have more detail on each of those, but particularly I'll focus on the post-construction monitoring and reporting. First of all, the Atlantic salmon habitat down in the Narragansett River watershed. There's no direct impact to the habitat. That is the base Division of Marine Resources. The freshwater, inland freshwater folks had no concern. Okay. And then U.S. Fish and Wildlife also looked at that as well. As I mentioned, there were no concerns on the rare threatened and endangered, but there is this is supported by conditions of approval as far as post-construction monitoring. The bird and bat, particularly the bat mortality monitoring, which is tied together with the Operation Curtailment Program for the first 2 years, a study that's going on to look at the cut-in speed of the turbines, detail. Pre-application studies were all conducted. It is a post-construction monitoring proposed, and it includes experimental operational curtailment, an adaptive management plan, and a management action plan. This is all supported by the conditions of approval. This is the study. The post-construction study is looking at mortality of bats and curtailment going on at the same time for 2 years. Per LURC and IFNW will look at the plan and how that is developed and look over the semi-annual reports when they come in. The participants in it are Blue Sky East, the permittee, IFNW, and Bat Conservation International. In designing the plan and looking at the results, it will go from seasonally from April to October. I think it's April 15th to October 30th. But it's all of those months. The semi-annual reports submitted to LURC and IFW, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is available for consultation on that as well. And I'll just stop there if there's any questions. That's
looks like we're all
and
set.
I know you heard a lot about it during the public hearing and in the deliberations, so yeah,
right.
Just wanted to review
right.
that for you. Yeah. And I'm ready to go to the applicant has requested several changes to the permit. This went around to the parties in reference to financial capacity. This is some of the wording. The decommissioning plan revision and the wildlife bat study conditions. And I'm going to, Samantha worked on this with Amy, so I'm going to be available for details. And
I have one. We heard from the applicant after the release of the draft document that they had a few concerns about the conditions of approval, and they sent us some specific written comments, including some suggested markup language. We also heard from concerned citizens of rural Hancock County about their take on the applicant's suggestions, and staff. We thought there was a way to resolve the issue, still being protective of the state's interest and the public interest, but accommodating the applicant's concerns, make sure that we were clear about the decision we were making, make sure that the financial capacity statements were workable for everyone. So we sent you a written memorandum that includes a staff recommendation for changes yesterday. I think you all have a paper copy at this point. I'm going to set some paper copies back on a chair in case any members of the audience would like to look at it. And Gwen, would you like me to briefly go through these, or would you, since you all have this memo at this point, would you rather I skip that?
What's commissioners, you have any preference? Have you had a chance to look this over? Any questions? I guess we're all set. If I, unless someone wants to raise a concern or. Okay.
I think they're consistent with our discussions. I mean, I think they clean up some language. They clarify. I don't view them as substantial changes.
Good. I would agree with that. All right. Is there anything else that what we're looking at is there anything else that we need to do? Maybe I should ask the staff that. So I avoid skipping any steps here. We're coming to a final vote on this project, and I guess I want to make sure everybody's had their questions and concerns addressed.
I've noted just a few very minor errata misspellings, that sort of thing, but I don't think I need to run through them with you necessarily. We'll have to apply the changes that are in the staff memo. We'll apply those errata changes at the same time.
Okay.
I don't have anything further at this point. Don, do you?
No. Okay. Thoroughly covered.
The only other addition was the one that Sally made.
Yes, and
oh, yeah.
we will apply that.
Okay. Good. I guess I'll call for a vote on this. All those in favor?
Well,
I need a motion.
I move approval of DP. What is
Thank
it?
Thank you, Ed.
4866.
Thanks.
As amended.
As amended, yeah.
I'll second.
And a second? Any more discussion? All those in favor? All those opposed? And all those abstaining?
If I can get my mic to work. Just for the record, I was not available for all the public hearings and so forth, so I am going to abstain from this vote because I think that adds a flavor and dimension that you need when you're making the decision.
Thank you. Before we move on, I just want to recognize the staff's effort in this decision and writing up this decision. I was very impressed, and I think we were well prepared to deliberate and make this decision. And I also thank all those who have been involved in this process, who actually came out and the applicant, obviously, and any of the interveners and the public that came out and expressed opinions about the project.
I'd like to second the accolades for the staff and the diligence in following up on this. I think they did a great job.
Thank you.
All right. What I'd like to do is take about a half an hour recess, just so commissioners need to sort of get their gears shifted here to move into another wind power project that we're going to be discussing. And how about if we're back here, 11 o'clock? Let's do 11 o'clock.